What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson, and I am alongside the myth, the legend, the man, Casey Clapp.
Hello, everyone. It's good to be here. I'm happy.
Oh, okay. He's happy. That's good.
Hi, Alex. How's it going?
Hi, Casey.
I really wish I had sunglasses on when I did that and long flowing hair.
I would be happy. Well, you have long flowing hair.
Yes, I do. It's kind of in a bun right now, in a ball, but yeah.
I would be happy to do it again and lend you my sunglasses.
Nope. It's already too late. All right. The moment is past.
Well, we'll never get that back.
Yeah, we sure won't. Certainly not 1 week from now. How you doing, Alex?
What's happening 1 week from now?
Well, we'll do another podcast.
Oh.
So I can just try it again.
I'm doing pretty good, Case.
Good to hear. I'm happy to hear it.
Yeah. Can I share something with you and our listenership?
I would love you to.
I put out a record.
Oh.
That happened a couple weeks ago.
It did, but we got to make sure everyone knows about it.
Yeah. I just wanted to take a couple seconds to say that, hey, I put out a new record.
Yeah.
And it's 7 songs, and you can go listen to it wherever you want. You can stream it for free. You can buy it on Bandcamp. There's all different sorts of avenues to hearing this music.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it, and now, I hope people to enjoy it.
If you bought it on Bandcamp, did you get a CD, a physical CD?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't make physical media for this one.
I gotcha.
But for a record I'm planning on making next year, I would love to do a short run of vinyl. I think that would be really sweet.
Oh, that would be so excellent.
Yeah.
Would it be a colored vinyl, like you know, the new fancy fandangled things?
You know what that reminds me of? Like Nintendo games, like Nintendo 64 games. They had a few that were like yellow or blue. Tony Hawk was blue.
I remember that, and that was sick.
Really cool.
Yeah. Well, I think a James Bond one that I remember was blue.
Yeah. I think Donkey Kong was banana yellow.
Good for them.
As you would.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, sure. I'll do some color. And the vinyl is so prohibitively expensive. I would have to do a pre-sale. Anyway. Please
love it.
Please go listen to my new record. If you like me, I think you would like my music.
I like you and I like your music. Was listening to it just the other day, and Hannah was like, "Who is this?" And I was like, "This is Alex."
Wow.
Or maybe more specifically, she was like, "Wait, this is Alex?" And I was like, "Yeah, this is his new record." She was like, "Oh my gosh." Like, not out of surprise, just like, I think she didn't realize we weren't listening to just some normal like pop up on Spotify or something.
Sure.
Just like, it's the music that I normally listen to. So I think she was like, "Oh, we know this guy. Oh my gosh, it sounds so good, Alex."
Yeah, the production is really nice on it.
Yeah, you did a lot of really cool stuff. I remember talking throughout the entire process, and I think actually, if you're on our Patreon, you can listen to an interview that we did about this entirely.
That's right.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I was just on a podcast called Dan Cable Presents.
Okay.
Where you can hear me talk about my history with music. So if you Google Dan Cable Presents Alex Croson, you can listen to me on a podcast, but not this podcast.
That's going to be weird, Alex.
I know. It was very strange. It was like... I was weirdly nervous. Like, we do this every week, and I'm never nervous for it.
Well, yeah, you're sitting in a different chair at that point, you know?
That's true.
Yeah.
I was talking to a different co-host. It was weird.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. See, if it's not my, you know, gorgeous voice, then it's just like, what's even the point?
It was a nice time. Dan's a good guy, and I got to talk about music for a couple hours, which was a lot of fun.
That's what I'm talking about. Well, go give a listen to Dan Cable Presents Alex Croson.
Yeah.
And...
Bless you.
And Alex, is there a way we can watch you play music sometime soon?
Sure, Casey. You can you can come to my show in Portland, Oregon at Turn on December 7th.
Oh, excellent. I used to live right next to that venue. I love
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Are you going to be there on December 7th?
That's my plan.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
You're a good supporter of my music career,
well,
Casey.
Thank you. You're a good supporter of my tree career, Alex.
I'm sorry I've never been on one of your tree walks.
That's okay. You've lived through years of them at this point, so you're good.
That's fair.
And I am also getting over a slight cold, so if I have to do something that sounds horrific on microphone, Alex will edit it out, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think you'll be fine.
Thank you.
If I ever see you lean away from the mic, I'll fill that space.
Yeah, thank you.
I won't just be like, Casey's coughing.
Just keep on chatting. It's like, man, Casey hasn't talked in like 2 minutes. What's going on?
Casey, speaking about Casey talking, we've got a tree to talk about today.
We sure do, Alex. Good transition.
And this week's tree is the white oak.
World famous.
I kind of couldn't believe that we hadn't done this one yet.
Yeah, you know what?
Is that right?
Yes. You couldn't believe that it was not done.
Yes.
Yeah.
It seems like such a popular big name tree.
Yeah. It really is.
This is sort of a Tom Hanks figure, I think. And
I think that's a good description of oak trees. Now, the Jeffrey Pine is the Tom Hanks of pine cones.
Oh, right.
But
per our friend Jeff, I almost called him Jeffrey Pine.
Jeffrey Pine.
Tobin Mitnick.
Yes, I think he would also love to go by Jeffrey Pine.
I'm sure.
Hi, I'm Pine Jeffrey.
It's a stage name.
Pine up there. that's true. Alex, it is. It's like this. It feels to me like the most ubiquitous of oak trees.
Wow. Even more so than the Oregon white oak.
Oh yeah. Way more. Because if you think about it, the Oregon white oak grows in like this really small strip of land over here on the west. Like essentially it goes to the east of the Cascades a little bit, which if my friend Tyler's listening, I eat my words. I used to argue that it doesn't go east of the Cascades.
Oh,
it does.
You got owned?
I got owned. Well, he was just very, very sure of it. And I was like, that just doesn't happen. And then he's like, what about in the gorge? I'm like, the gorge doesn't count. Like, that's not an eastern species. That's just where things like bleed kind of through this hole in the wall. So I eat my words, though. There are a bunch of places where you are easily on the other side of the Cascades, not in the gorge, oak trees.
That is toxic behavior, though, to be presented with a counterfact and say that doesn't count.
Well, that's fine.
My ship's got shields. You can't hit me.
Yeah, but later. Well, it's an argument. We'll have to have it some other time.
Yes, okay? That's not why we're here today.
Anyway, it's a small little section.
Sure, but the white oak
is
ubiquitous.
Correct. Now, you could call this the eastern white oak, or more commonly, Quercus alba.
Yeah.
I should rephrase, less commonly, but more specifically, Quercus alba.
Any relation?
No, I don't think so. I think Jessica is a completely different, she's from a different part of the country.
Okay, different genus?
Yeah, different genus entirely.
Got it,
so,
okay.
Yeah, I don't, I'm sorry.
Casey, let's imagine that you and I are walking around far, far, far east of the gorge.
Yes.
And we come across some Quercus alba. Let's ID this tree.
Let's go get it. So the Quercus alba, the eastern white oak, or for now and henceforth, the white oak.
Sure.
Is a ubiquitous tree in the east. It grows essentially
We need a ubiquitous counter, by the way.
Oh, How many times have we said ubiquitous? All right. I'll change it to a different word.
No, I think we should continue using it.
Just keep track. If we can get to 10 before this, everyone gets 10% off anything
Casey
in the store. So if you take the
we purposefully do 9. Oh, sorry everybody.
Sorry, guys, we're not our control. Oh, that would be so
scummy.
Funny. So if you are at the Mississippi River, if you're on the west side, there's probably going to be not this oak, probably the bur oak. If you're on the east side, it's going to be this oak.
Got it.
From like if you just follow the Gulf of Mexico and kind of the border, the northern border of Florida, and you go up to essentially the border of Canada, but that's not like an exact border. That is where it's from. Essentially, what is now the United States, the entire eastern half of it.
Wow.
Pretty much.
Okay.
And like from that entire big swath, it grows probably most commonly. I don't want to say 100% because there's pin oaks. There's like 30 different oak species that are like this size of tree that grow over there, like just all over the place.
Okay.
However, for whatever reason, this just feels like the most common one.
Mm.
Whenever I'm walking around in the streets of Raleigh, North Carolina, I'm like, there's a white oak. If you are just cruising through, you know, any kind of neighborhood area, this is like the very common oak tree that you see.
Okay.
Now, to tell it apart is not generally very hard, but it is It's whenever anyone thinks in their brain, oak tree, this is the tree they're thinking of.
I mean, it's a white oak. So is it like the type species of white oaks?
I don't think so.
Okay. But it has white oak characteristics, I'm assuming.
It is, yeah. And so I don't know 100% on that because I don't know what the type species of oak would be, but my guess is it was the ones from Europe because that's the ones most likely that Linnaeus was initially looking at, which would be Quercus robur, the English or the French oak, the pedunculate oak often.
I guess I was speaking specifically in comparison to the red oak.
Oh, yes, exactly. So this is a difference we should talk about. For a white oak tree, it has rounded lobes on the leaf. For a red oak or a black oak family or subfamily tree, they have bristle tips on the ends of their lobes. So they come to these very, very fine kind of points with almost like this little bristly hair kind of popping out at the end of each lobe. So very, very distinct kind of looks.
A good way to remember is Aunt Spiker and Aunt Sponge from James and the Giant Peach.
Yes, that's a great way.
Spiker is red.
What the difference is between them?
Spiker is like tall and angular.
Oh, physically. I see. Yeah.
Sponge is short and not so angular.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. That's exactly it. Yeah. Yes. This rotund. Is the rotund leaf of the peach family.
Yeah.
Of oak trees.
Of the peach family?
Yeah, of oak, because I was James and Jack Peach.
Oh, Casey, I'm so sorry.
I did it on purpose. It was meant to be confusing. Everyone out there, I'm sorry. I just broke your brain.
Wow.
So if you're looking at this tree, the big thing that you first see is that it's a huge tree. They grow big, like I think up to easily 100 feet. Some have been a little bit higher. Some have been a little bit lower. Between like 60 and 80 is kind of the average that you'd see them on.
Jeez.
But their big globes is their thing. They grow up and they create these huge, big, very globe circular kind of canopies.
Cool.
And those canopies, when they're young, kind of start out as more of a pyramid kind of thing where the bottom is growing a little bit slower than the top is growing up. So it's kind of growing out from the bottom, but it's also growing up in the middle. So it kind of looks like a triangle that initially is kind of an isosceles triangle.
Yeah.
With the two sides that are the same length, and then the bottom is much smaller. So they're very close together.
Right.
Very acute angle on the tip. Sorry, more geometry this week, everyone.
Yeah, what's up?
I don't know. This is weird. I'm just in a phase right now. But then as time happens, the angle kind of broadens out and the lower limbs grow up and out as well. So it creates this big circular globe. So imagine taking a skinny upright triangle and then allowing it to just slowly transform itself into a big circle.
Cool.
That's, I think, what these trees kind of end up doing.
More obtuse.
Quite obtuse, Alex. That is quite acute of you. So the thing is, though, when you're looking at the leaves and you zoom in from this canopy a little bit, they are oaks, so they are alternately arranged down the stem. And they have these gorgeous leaves. Again, this is the leaf. This is the ubiquitous leaf of fall, of our, like you see like a russet colored oak leaf, you know, on a poster that's denoting its fall, it's autumn. That is the eastern white oak that you're seeing.
Okay.
So its leaves come out and you have kind of like, it looks like a kind of silly drawing, again, a rotund, but like a skinny rotund drawing that's very, everything's very rounded, but imagine like a small little kid's drawing of like a character like putting their hands up and being like, yeah, it's kind of like that with two big lobes or a few kind of normal size lobes, but they all kind of pop up and out and kind of cascade off of the central main mid rib.
So it's not so like lowercase t, it's more like uppercase y.
Yeah, exactly. But then if the y kind of curves out a little bit at the end, so kind of a silly drawing of a y.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it has, again, those rounded lobes. It's a lighter green underneath, kind of a darker, not super intensely leathery on top, but kind of a dark waxy look on top with a very kind of muted lime green on the bottom.
Hmm.
And of course, as white oak, it has little acorns. Those little acorns are usually born kind of at the tip of the branch, of the little twigs, and their cap covers just about half of the acorn itself.
Wow.
And they're just kind of normal. They just look like little bumps. There's no like long strips to them or anything like that. They just kind of look like these little kind of bumpy caps, and they are always maturing in 1 year. That's another white oak characteristic. The acorns take 1 year to become fully mature, and then they drop, as opposed to the red oak or the black oak subfamily, where it takes 2 seasons.
Okay, so there. Remind me, like, how mast years play into all this?
Oh, yeah. So a mast year is essentially a boom and bust kind of situation. So if you want to know more about this, go listen to our second episode on the Oregon white oak. Mm. And that is essentially where a tree, or a mast year, essentially is when a tree produces a huge amount of mast, which would be its fruit. All that mast comes at 1 year, and then at the next year after that, sometimes it makes almost no acorns at all.
Mm.
So it's this boom and bust where there's just like the whole thing's covered with a bunch of acorns, then it almost takes a couple years to recover, then it puts out a bunch of new acorns again in a following year.
Yeah.
But usually that cycle is 2 or 3 years go between these big boom mast years.
Right.
And then in between, there's generally not a lot.
Okay.
So that happens with these, but it's not so synced up across the entire forest,
right?
You know, where individual trees will have get big mast year, but also like whole populations will still have them because they're all dealing with like kind of the same environmental stimuli.
So mast years have little to nothing to do with like the regularity of acorn production.
No, not in a strict sense.
Okay.
You would have, if a tree's going to make acorns, if it's a white oak, it's going to make that acorn in 1 year.
Got it.
If it is a red oak or a black oak subfamily group, like the northern red oak or the black oak or the pin oak and things like that, those will always grow their acorns in 2 years.
Okay.
So you'll have a mast year, but that mast year would maybe start 2 years ago. You know
what
I mean?
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Casey, can we talk bark?
Oh, Alex, we can talk bark.
Woof woof.
This is such a beautiful tree in terms of its bark.
Wow.
So, you know, if you picture like oak, it usually has like kind of rough and tumble bark most of the time, or like these classic like oaks that, you know, everyone thinks of that are,
sure,
you know, always in our environment.
Thick furrows.
Yeah. And like
deep ridges.
Exactly. Like they're kind of platy, but they're irregular. Like you can't see any like perfect things coming down, you know, like no long strips or anything. Nothing really continues too far up. When these oak trees are young, they have that same exact pattern.
Okay.
However,
ooh,
as they age, they start to become really flaky at the bottom. So the ridges that when the tree is kind of young, but by young, I mean smaller diameter.
Okay.
The ridges, they're just kind of there. They stay really attached. As that tree gets bigger, those ridges almost start to like pop and flake off. So you get this like really shaggy, flaky appearance in the lower like 6 feet of the trunk.
Is that a fire thing?
I don't think so, because fire does not appear to be a really intense driver for these forests where this tree grows. Some forests down there are certainly fire dependent and have had peoples and nature putting fires in there for many, many decades and centuries, years, millennia, all that.
Yeah.
However, it does not appear that these are specifically fire developed trees. It's just the bark ends up getting shaggy. It very well may play into fire dependency, or rather fire resilience.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to me from my research that it is 100% something that has developed, as opposed to something like the bur oak, where that is the case, where fire was way more of a player in its ecosystem, which is essentially from that Mississippi line to the west in the Great Plains. That is where the bur oak is way more of a player.
Okay,
and so that one has a lot of fire.
So it just it's sort of randomly gets this flaky bark, but only in the bottom chunk.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a couple other species, there's a swamp white oak that also has the same thing, but instead of just the bottom kind of 6 feet or so, it's like the entire lower big section of the trunk is just flaky, flaky, flaky.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty gorgeous, I have to say.
Yeah? It sounds like it would be messy looking, but is it just like pretty in a messy way?
Yeah, I think it's messy in like a frilly kind of way, you know?
Like Chantilly lace.
Exactly. Yeah, you're like, oh my gosh, like you have all these little strips hanging off. Like it's kind of like not quite the same as a madrone, but like you can imagine describe the madrone's peely, flaky bark is kind of, you know, unattractive, but in fact, it's quite attractive.
It's part of its charm.
Exactly.
Of course.
That's what I'd say.
Interesting. Well, Casey, we got lots more to talk about with the white oak.
Oh, Alex, do we ever.
But we must talk about it after the break.
I understand.
I'm so sorry to do this to you. I do it to you every week, too.
I hate this.
I promise it's worth our while.
Okay. All right. Well,
unrelated, everybody please listen to the ads. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary.
Self-loathing peanut butter hater.
That's what you are.
Like that's like that's a song that has to be on something somewhere.
Yeah, it sounds like one-eyed, one-horned, self-loathing peanut butter hater.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's totally it.
By the way, we're back. Hi, everybody. Today we're talking the white oak Quercus alba.
That's right.
This is a tree that I knew the Latin of. I knew the scientific name long before we ever talked about it, just because it's so much in the zeitgeist.
It is. It's just there. It is just. I think that whenever anyone thinks, and this is especially true for anyone from the East Coast, whenever they think white oak, this is the white oak they're talking about.
That you could say that the white oak is ubiquitous.
I was like, I don't know what he's gonna say.
That's five.
If you say it and then I say it just right afterwards, is that kind of actually six, or is we you know,
I think it's still five.
Okay, that's still five. That's because I was trying to say it at
we
the
had
same
three
time.
Before so this Jeez. That's four and five.
Whew. Sorry everyone,
only five more
to go and we might have a chance to get 10% off.
Amazing.
I think that ad's already played, so now the game's out. They already know they're getting 10%.
Maybe not if they're listening on Spotify.
Oh my God. Don't tell anyone. Everyone. So right now we're sending out this podcast on Thanksgiving. So I kind of wanted to, Alex, with your accompaniment.
Yes.
Talk about this tree and a little bit about Thanksgiving. It's not that this tree explicitly had something to do with Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
However, it kind of plays a unique role between the two cultures that have clashed that I think is really kind of fascinating.
It doesn't surprise me because this tree is so ubiquitous.
Exactly.
Oh, there's six.
So this is it's a celebrity tree, as we've already kind of noted, and that's especially true also, as I've noted, for people on the East Coast. Now the thing is, this is not for people who are on the East Coast now. This is also for people who've been on the East Coast for like 20,000 years.
Wow.
So it again right now in like the imagery of the white oak, This is the classic tree.
Can I say a joke that I wanted to say right after you said 20,000 years?
You may.
Talk about rent control.
I don't get the joke. Are you okay?
I'm stretching my neck because it hurts very bad.
Okay, yeah, I noticed that, but I wasn't sure.
Sorry.
I wasn't sure if I needed to bring it up.
I looked like I was having some sort of episode.
Yeah, you kind of did. Yeah, and I wasn't sure. Okay, so right now it's fall, and like it's the classic time for all of the imagery in the world to have deciduous leaves on it, and no one can think about what a leaf looks like other than a maple leaf and an oak leaf.
True.
So you always see maples and oaks. Like I don't think
that's so funny.
It's just always in, and if they don't know that it's a sweet gum or a plane tree or a sycamore,
yeah,
they're just gonna draw it like an oak tree anyway, or like a maple leaf because they think it's a maple leaf.
That's so funny.
It's
I will add to this
what
Like a simple leaf.
Yes.
Like what, like,
I don't know, a cherry or something.
Yeah.
Just like the classic, just like oval kind of leaf.
Yes.
Yes.
Tulip tree or
something. Totally agreed. No, tulip tree. That's the cat face one. That's one that looks like, Felix the cat. That's like the most opposite of a normal leaf you can imagine.
What am I thinking of? I was probably thinking of tulip tree and I'm just wrong.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. There's a lot of just like normal utility leaf trees, you know?
Cherry is good, cherry.
But the thing is, like that doesn't emote a specific tree. And I think people are like, well, I got to draw a leaf. And so they usually end up drawing one of these classic leaves. Like, oh, oak leaf. I can draw an oak leaf.
Right.
So you get it everywhere. And then, of course, if you draw an oak, then you can put a little like grouping of three acorns there as well. And you have like this nice little fall tree motif going on. It's been that way for as long as we've been like adding these little frilly things to our fall product lines.
Millennia.
Right? Millennia. The Wampanoag people were doing this way back when. They were like, we have to change the curtains.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's now fall. Let's put up our acorn curtains.
Your great aunt's ancestors were stitching acorns onto their hand towels.
It looked very good. So that is like this like, you know, this current imagery that we have for this tree. But there's also like these characteristics of oak, and this oak in particular, of being like strong wood, huge canopy, this picturesque, like old worldly kind of like statuesque thing, right?
Yeah. I actually want to do something, and then I'm gonna let you keep talking, and then I'll come back and let you know the result.
Okay.
I am going to do a stock image search for oak tree.
That sounds great.
And I'm going to see how many hits there are, because I bet you there are a shit ton.
Okay, yeah, let's find out. So I'll continually chat about this, because as I noted just then, this is like an old worldly tree. It's a tree that if you came from the quote old world, which just to be clear, anytime I say this, I'm going to put air quotes around it. Just have that in there.
I should have said that Casey's doing aggressive air quotes when he says old world.
I don't really love that term, but it also becomes really helpful if you're just talking about trees from this one general region of the earth versus trees from this other general region of the earth.
You're not intending to use it harmfully.
Yes, exactly. So, but it might be easier if I just say from Europe or from this place, but Europe doesn't quite capture it all versus North America doesn't quite capture it all. Anyway, thank you for the asterisks every time. So in the New World, before the colonists came, when it was an old world to these other people, there was like the oak tree still played this really important role. It was a big tree and they used it in a million different ways. Either it was just simply living life. They would have meetings under it. It would be this big grand tree where they would have councils with themselves, with newcomers. It's a place to meet. They used it for a thousand different things. And there's like a timer. So let me give you some examples of what I'm talking about.
A timer?
Yeah. Isn't that fun?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So
I think I understand.
So the native peoples of the East, and over in the Northeast is kind of where our topics are, we're focused a little bit here.
Okay.
Those like the Narragansetts and the Wampanoags, the Mohawks, these kinds of people up in the old Northeastern tribes that are up there. The native peoples in the East, they've always known this tree, and it's been used for a thousand different things, like an astringent. It was used as a tonic, an antiseptic, emetic. Do you know what an emetic is?
Emetic.
Yeah.
Is that like a blood clot thing?
No.
What is it?
It is something that makes you vomit.
Oh, yes. I do know this.
Okay, yeah. But I just forgot it.
Yeah.
It's like emit is like in the word.
Ah.
Except it's spelled with an E. So an emetic is something that makes you emit, which I thought was fun.
That's very
good. I don't know if I'm getting the etymology right. I didn't look it up, but it made sense to me, and that's how my brain works.
That's our headcanon.
Yeah, thank you. I found a lot of information saying that it supported health. So kind of like a lot of different supplement trees where it just supports health in, you know, a lot of different ways.
Sure. There are these trees that just sort of like are general purpose.
Yeah. Like healthy. Tulsi as a plant, or ginkgo, witch hazel, these kinds of of things.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So they used it for fevers, indigestion, milky urine, chronic dysentery. They would bathe in it and have teas. Yeah, apparently. I don't know what causes that off the top of my head.
I don't love the words milky urine and make teas in the same
I make teas with milky urine. That way I don't have to put any milk in my teas.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, everyone. A collective vomit just, you know, I erupted from everybody.
Emitted.
But they emitted. They probably had too much oak from this podcast. Nice. So, but yeah, they used it for all sorts of things. They made it, it used a decoction from the inner bark for a lost voice. You know, it would just be a general use tree. Now, they also used it as a craft product. Firewood, lumber, furniture, woven chairs. They would split it and use it for baskets and kind of bend it and do things like that. They used the oak leaves to make dough for bread making.
Wow. And
it was also apparently uniquely used for making bows and like shooting, you know, bow and arrow kind of things.
Wow.
I had no idea. I thought mostly people used yew for that, but I figured you got to have a second source.
Yeah. Were there a lot of yews native to the Northeast?
You know, I think there's one, but there's not a lot, not near as much as we have out here in our forests or elsewhere in the United States or in the world rather.
Interesting. Okay.
Now the big thing.
What
though,
a tree.
Well, actually we should pause. Did you get an answer from your search?
I typed in oak tree into Adobe Stock.
Okay.
1,000,000. 93,702 results.
Wow.
Okay. Plus almost 50,000 videos.
Jeez. Okay, and I bet you these are all white oaks. If not the English white oak, the Eastern white oak. I would be like,
yeah.
I would say a proportion that is more than Ron DeSantis's win in Florida.
Oh my God.
Is that a good way to rate proportions these days?
Very atypical political statement from Casey. What's a tree that I could search that's like maybe not as popular just to see the difference?
Okay, the first thing that comes to my mind is linden.
Okay, L-I-N
D-E-N. Yeah.
Linden tree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For linden, we have 63,000 results.
Wow. See, and like you probably find lindens just as much as you find oaks.
Sure.
Anyway.
The oaks have it.
The oaks have it. The oaks have the win. So this is, for all the things that people would use this for, this imagery keeps popping up all over the place.
Yeah.
We're going to hit back to that in a second. The big thing that I want to note before we leave too far is that this tree is one that was used for food so much.
Oh yeah, baby.
So have you ever had an acorn, Alex?
You know, Case, I can't say I have.
Neither
unless
have
there's
I.
Some like botanical definition of acorn. Ooh. I'm not aware of. Like,
well, no, it's
have you had a peanut? That's actually
I think I'm about to like flip that script on you. Like, well, Alex, funny enough, what you're holding right now, that banana, is actually an acorn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's I saw when, you eat an acorn this morning.
That's when I get punched from everybody. No, in this case, actually the acorn is the diminutive of an oak.
Right.
I'm sorry, of a nut. Excuse me. So, if you were to eat a nut,
mm-hmm.
It's like a square and a rectangle, you know, where
okay.
an acorn is a nut, but a nut is not necessarily an acorn.
Right.
Nut is more generic than acorn.
I have not eaten acorns. I would love to try like acorn bread.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and so that's the thing. Like that was what these were used for. They would make this dough out of them. Like they would grind them up and leach all of the tannins out of them.
Yeah.
Turn them into this powder, and then they would use that as like this dough that they would either make a bread or like a bread kind of thing with it, or mm-hmm. they would add on a lot of different things. And it's still done today. So I'm using the past tense out of my strict habit of just always thinking that. And I'm addressing it right now.
You beat
me
to
it. Back. Thank you. It is still done today.
Yes.
People use it. It is just, it's fallen out of fashion is the best way to describe it. It's now what people call a traditional use, you know?
Right.
And it's like this really interesting thing. It turns out though that the white oak, our white oak here, was used for this more than almost any other species because it had the most least amount of tannins.
The most least amount of tannins.
Yes. I could probably just skip the most part and just say the least, but that's stupid.
The biggest, smallest amount.
Yeah.
So tannins are what makes something bitter.
Yeah, correct.
poisonous at all?
I don't think quite poisonous, okay, to that level, but you wouldn't even eat it because it would just taste so bad.
Yeah, yeah. That's the kind of thing you think it's going to taste good. You eat it and you're like, oh my God, like baker's chocolate or something.
Yeah. It might make your stomach upset though. I bet you it would if you just like started chomping on it and you like just swallowed it, though your body's like actively saying, please don't do this.
What is a tannin?
A tannin is a chemical that's inside of the bark, the wood, mm-hmm, and it's essentially just a means of the tree keeping insects and things from eating.
Okay, it's a defense mechanism.
Yeah, you find it in leaves, in bark, you find it in a lot of different inner bark is kind of a big thing for it. So an insect would kind of drill through the bark into the inner bark and they would just hit all these tannins and it would just be very unpalatable.
Okay.
So yeah, it's what keeps animals from eating different parts of a plant.
Got it.
And the acorn and the oak trees at large have a lot of tannins in them, specifically to help keep their beautiful little nut safe from anything just chomping down on
it. It wants to protect. Okay, it wants to keep anything that would eat the acorn,
yeah,
from eating it so that it can reproduce.
That's exactly right. Unfortunately, most animals are like, I don't really care about that, and they just eat straight through them. Like, you know, weevils and turkeys, deer, name it. A bunch of things eat acorns.
And then they just have mad diarrhea.
Yeah, they just like, they have to crush through all of those, the actual like hard nut on the outside to get to the flesh. Yeah, I don't know why they do that. They should really think about something different.
And then crazy Hershey squirts.
Oh, thank you, Alex. Yeah. To go along with your cloudy urine, your milky urine.
This is like Willy Wonka's factory from hell.
Yeah. Botanical factory from hell.
Yes. Hershey really squirts good. And cloudy urine.
Oh, disgusting.
I'll edit all this out.
Excellent. So yeah, a lot of different, peoples would use this and they would routinely use this oak, as a place to go out and do something. So as soon as it became the right time of year, it would be like this tradition to have all the people go out, go collect from all these different trees and then haul back all of the stuff and then process all of these acorns. They break them open, get out the meat. They would pound it into this essential powder. Then they would leach it in water and keep on emptying and refilling this water until it ran clear. That's when you knew all the tannins had been leached away.
The same thing with rice.
Yes, exactly. So it's a really like a community-based kind of thing.
Cool.
And the bit that I was telling you about how they would use it for a timer, mm-hmm, is I read that there was someone who's going to cut down a big old oak tree, and I think it might have been the charter oak, but I'm not sure. Mm. We'll talk about that in a second. They were going to cut this tree down, and one of the native people said, "Hey, you know, don't cut that down. Like my people planted that tree. It's really important to us, and also we use it to know when to plant our corn, because when the leaves are unfurling and they're the size of a mouse's ear,
wow,
that's when it's the right time to plant corn.
Wow.
So that's what they would do. So they would. It was such a part of their culture where it was just used for everything, but also like not used for everything in a physical way, but used for it in this like metaphysical way.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, I can't think of a, I mean, I guess like there's just a vast sort of difference in the value we place in plants.
Yeah, totally.
Like I can't think of anything like that with modern like American culture.
There isn't. There really isn't. And that is such a fantastic transition, Alex, to bringing up how our modern culture kind of got to where it is today.
Okay.
So people from Europe and England were very specific or very familiar with oak trees, mm-hmm, to begin with. So if you go back thousands and thousands of years, the peoples of Europe were very much in the same relationship with oak trees as the native peoples of the United States and Canada today.
Sure.
Were. I lost track of my tense. Ooh. There. I wasn't sure what I was actually saying, so I didn't know, like, is, were, are? Yeah. Let me rephrase. The people of Europe,
yes,
way back when, pre-Christian times, had the same exact relationship as tribes and native peoples of the North American area have today. Or if we go back maybe 3,000 years, mm-hmm. they kind of were all on the same page, doing okay. the same thing with the same kinds of trees.
Okay, the same reverence and the same like uses.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. Okay. So you remember we've talked lots of times about a bunch of different oaks of Europe, like the holm oak, the pedunculate oak, the sessile oak, cork yeah. oak. More as you go south, there's a Hungarian oak in kind of the eastern side of the huh. of this area. So all of these people would use and revere oaks in the same way that the native tribes used them before the colonists came over.
Yeah.
And that is because they were food. So, in fact, there's a term for it in Greek. It's called balanophagy. Balano, or balan, B-A-L-A-N,
okay.
means acorn, and phagy means eater. So it literally is, the word is acorn eater. Balanophagy.
To refer to a person?
If you were if you and your crew are acorn eaters,
yeah.
you would be balanophagi.
Wow.
The term for you doing that is balanophagy with a Y.
It almost sounds like a diss. Like, oh, the people over the hill there?
Oh, yeah,
yeah. They're balanophagi.
Honestly, I would not be surprised if the Greeks, when they came up with this, because they were talking about people over this is in classical times, so this was actually in Greek times where there were tribes that were just further out, and they're like, yeah, of course we eat acorns. And they're like, yeah, they're balanophagi.
Like the Scottish or something.
Yeah, I don't know if they. Well, I don't know if it was quite like. I don't know. That's a really good question, Alex. I can't decide if way back then if the context was just like, yeah, we just we call them what they do because that's how we refer to them,
right?
But it wasn't like we were better than you kind of thing,
right? It's such a specific thing, like
yeah.
oh, we eat olives, they eat acorns. If you
yeah,
know what I mean,
exactly. You know? So I don't know 100% if which way it is. So I don't have a good question. That's a good question.
That's a good episode title too.
Great episode title. Yeah,
balanophagy.
But so before Christianity really kind of co-opted a lot of these things, you had people like the Druids, and they're these like indigenous religions of Europe and Northern Europe where they revered trees. It's famous for like Christians in late Roman times going and attacking the pagans and like finding their sacred trees for these, you know, Celts and cutting them down. You know, like these were intense things. Probably because they ate the acorns.
Yeah.
Probably because it was these big trees where they would meet and hold councils. It would be the biggest, oldest tree in this spot. So they would go over and say, yes, we'll meet underneath the acorn tree because that's what we do.
Yeah.
It is, it's a ubiquitous thing in terms of the amount of reverence that these kinds of two people had.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, let's just fast forward maybe. Enter Christianity, fast forward through that, and now that reverence and the balanophagy goes away.
Yeah.
Now acorns are not edible. We don't even try. Now we have more fancy things like wheat and other crops, and we got all these animals that we're going to eat, and it becomes now definitely a balanophagy. Gross.
Like, yeah.
Oh, you're acorn eaters? How pagan? How heathen? How not Christian? You know, we eat wheat and we have pigs and turnips and potatoes. Okay, not potatoes at this point. Sorry, I take that back.
Is it a matter of like agriculture versus forage culture?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Most definitely. Because agriculture definitely, you know, intensified as Christianity came through.
Yeah.
But by no means were these northern tribes in Europe not already doing agriculture. They definitely did it just like the Native American tribes. They were using the size of the oak leaf to know when to plant their corn.
Well, they weren't. I mean, like, I guess I meant agriculture in terms of the oak tree. They weren't silvoculturing oak trees.
Yes, they weren't planting oak trees. Yeah, they would still go out and forage for oak trees.
Right.
But then over time, they basically transitioned from foraging for acorns in a forest of oaks with their other crops growing over here to just cutting down all of the forest and planting all these
growing
other crops.
Growing more crops, okay.
It makes total sense. And at least this is the famous deal with the devil that humans have done, which if you want to read more about this... there's a book called Sapiens, which is so good.
Ooh.
And essentially, They decided it's too much work and it's too inconsistent to go out and find acorns. They have mast years. Some years there's no acorns. Some years there are. So they decided, if we just plant wheat, we'll get the same amount of wheat every single year all the time.
Sure.
We don't need to eat these acorns. We can make bread with wheat. Perfect.
And it's potentially like... Yeah, it's less like randomized.
Yeah.
And it's potentially like just easier to harvest because it's like right next to your house.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can just go outside and like harvest it and be done.
Precisely.
Not have to go hike into the woods.
Yeah. Funny thing is you have to work way harder to do the entire agricultural process rather than just letting an acorn grow on a tree that you don't have to do anything with.
Good point.
Yeah. Very funny how that works out. Again, go read that book. He kind of talks all about it.
Gotta swing a scythe. You ever swinged a scythe?
No. I haven't. I've tried one time and I just don't think it was sharp. It was like a little handheld one.
Okay.
And I failed horribly.
I'm talking about a big boy reaper scythe.
Yeah, no, I haven't. I would love to.
I would be afraid I would like cut my ankles off, like cut my feet off at the ankles.
That would be so funny. How does this thing work? And just cut straight through your bones and everything. It's the sharpest tool I've ever seen in my life.
that's what would happen to us in a cartoon if we tried to do that.
Yeah, it exactly would. Yeah. Oh, that'd be so funny. So fast forward, Alex, over to the very first colonization of the North American mainland with European colonizers.
Okay.
So they started in the same place, culturally speaking, thousands of years ago. Probably. I haven't necessarily, I can't like say 100%, but there are lots of different resources that say, yeah, the native peoples of Europe ate acorns all the time. That's right. A fact. The native peoples of North America ate acorns all the time. That's a fact. The difference of how those, like the cultures changed over, you know, several thousands of years, or rather didn't change depending on who you're talking about, and then clash those cultures together in this grand, interesting experiment of colonization that we took on so many years ago. And you all of a sudden get this weird thing happening where the people from Europe came over and they're like, hey, I know exactly what tree that is. That's an oak tree. That's a white oak tree. It looks just like the white oak tree that was growing, you know, on my father's farm in England.
Mm.
That kind of thing. Yet the reverence is completely different. One's like, sweet, we can use that to build ships. We can, you know, it's got a bunch of good firewood.
Yeah.
And we can use the tannin to tan our hides and our leathers and things like that. This is sweet. And then the other people are looking at it like, oh, well, it has all this meaning still in their life that hasn't kind of fallen by the wayside.
Yeah.
And so then this is like the weird kind of dissidence that has come together that a lot of people like have either A, forgotten about, and B, has been completely like changed with like this, the myth of Thanksgiving, which is something we wanted to talk about here, because the peoples, these two peoples met under oak trees all the time because they actually share the same reverence for this tree, albeit maybe from different sides, you know,
mm-hmm.
Big grand old statuesque tree because it's a big grand old statuesque tree and that's it, versus this tree has a whole bunch of, you know, cultural meaning to my entire way of life and my people's way of life for thousands of years. So there's I read a bit of an article by Claire Bugos, and it's with a guy named David Silverman, who's a historian, and he wrote a book called This Land Is Their Land. And it's really kind of a fascinating tale, and he just basically says this entire myth of what happened at Thanksgiving is completely wrong. Completely wrong. And like, for instance, the Mayflower arriving was not like a first contact. There'd been people in the Wampanoag tribe that kind of met with the Mayflower residents who had like already spoke English and had actually been to Europe and back again.
Wow.
So they're like, hey, we know who sent you. What's up? We're here. We're having a bunch of trouble with the Narragansetts. We hate these people. They're our enemies for time immemorial. So why don't you and I make a deal and we can live peacefully and fuck those guys.
Mm.
It's kind of what they were thinking, because there was like all these inner tribal politics at the time.
Sure.
And so that was like the first thing. This was not the first time they'd been there. But the funny thing is, funny is not the term. The most interaction they'd have was like people would come by and like do slave raids, like Europeans coming down the coast. But it was easier to just make a deal with these people because you're also still dealing with the politics of your own land, you know?
Yeah.
Like if there were slave traders or raiders coming down the coast of Europe, like the Vikings coming down or something, the French and the Spanish would be like, okay, we just want to make a deal with you. We are dealing with our own fights over here. We don't really have time, so let's just make a deal. You know, it was kind of like that.
Make a deal as in money?
Yeah, or just like, hey, we'll help you, and here's some corn. Like, this is, you know, traditional. Let's help each other, and then we don't have to deal with fighting with you.
I see.
We can fight and put all of our efforts towards these other things. So that's kind of the very first thing that he notes. He also notes, like, there's this, the theory is, like, there's this unnamed tribe who says, hello, welcome, we are now going to give you this land, and they disappear to history.
Right.
And it's almost like this handshake. And apparently this came from essentially, like, a New England newspaper where the New England was kind of feeling like, they were kind of losing out on their really cool status as like the rest of the colonies and the revolution started getting going and all these other things like further south, like Virginia's, you know, very famously involved in the revolutionary spirit. And so they basically tried to say, well, actually, New England is the father of the country.
Like, the birthplace of America.
That's exactly what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So this myth got created about this first, quote, Thanksgiving.
Wow.
There were Thanksgivings, apparently, for hundreds of years that the Europeans celebrated, but they would actually be more, like, focused on fasting. So they ended up saying, oh, well, the very first Thanksgiving was like this big meeting, this big dinner between the native Indians and these colonists who came over, and then they taught them how to do this and then just disappeared to history.
Right.
Of course, they didn't disappear through history. In fact, the next thing that happened is this gigantic war called King Philip's War, which King Philip is actually a tribal leader of the Wampanoags, and they just had this huge big fight and essentially like wiped them off of the playing field in terms of this sort of socioeconomic factor in the what thus became manifest destiny of the entire rest of the United States.
Who wiped whom?
The English colonists ended up beating all of the native peoples from New England and kind of pushed them out in a way. There was never like this nice, you know, big meal kind of thing.
Of course.
There were meetings. Chief Osemequin joined and met with the leaders of the Plymouth colony. Like these, they were meeting and talking. Like I said, they knew English, some of them.
Yeah.
So the whole situation is just a myth that actually really came out, you know, decades later and really like hit the gas pedal in the middle of the 1800s. In fact, it was President Lincoln who made it an official holiday.
Oh, wow.
Because he was trying to pull the nation together. Oh. So he latched on to this idea of this unifying, you know, Thanksgiving, this is our nation, to hold the nation that was now there together.
Yeah.
And this is also at the end of the Indian Wars out west, you know, over this time period in the late 1800s. So it kind of all galvanized about 150 years ago where everyone like were basically trying to A, justify the expansion of the United States and the colonization of it and saying, oh, it was essentially given to us. We had a Thanksgiving. The native peoples gave it to us. What are you talking about? Get out of our way. That kind of thing. So it became this like this way in the back of our brains to say this is okay.
Right.
It's not okay. It has not been okay. It's still not okay, but it's what we're dealing with today, you know? And so you have this this really interesting transition over like 100 years where you now forget about the actual history of where this came from versus what it is today. Now, Alex, I know what you're thinking. Weren't we talking about a tree?
Yes, Casey. How does this all play into the white oak?
So the white oak had this this place, as we've noted, in the cultures of both of these people. The first was the native peoples that were dealing with this tree for millennia. The second is that the peoples who came over from Europe were dealing with, for all intents and purposes, the same kinds of trees over there for millennia. When they came over here, they didn't necessarily see something that was completely unknown to them. They saw this tree and they're like, oh, an oak tree. Great. I know exactly what to do with this. It was, there wasn't even a question. It was almost like you got over here and you just started walking again as if there, you weren't anywhere new. But once all these wars happened, King's Philip War, the Revolutionary War, the Indian Wars, and all these different myths kind of galvanized and created this, this different kind of appeal, the oak tree, the white oak specifically, has been universal like throughout this and throughout everything. So the Charter Oak, famously on the back of the Connecticut coin, have you seen that?
Yeah, yeah.
That is about the time where the where all of this, you know, King Philip's War was happening in the late 1700s. In the late 1600s. This oak tree, it's called the Charter Oak because they hid the Connecticut Colony Charter in the hollow of this oak.
Oh my God!
Away from an English, some English guy who was trying to take it. And so they like said, oh no, we don't got it. Or if they searched the houses and they found one, there would be a copy and the original would be over there. So it's kind of this famous thing that the Charter Oak held the charter of the colony. And then, you know, 100 years later, then the colony still exists and can, you know, be a part of this revolution and become independent.
Interesting.
So the oak tree also still to this day, some of the best, most beautiful trees are white oaks over in the East. They're still this revered, gigantic tree.
Yeah.
But people also have this look where it's been this continuation from these ancient white oaks in Europe to these ancient white oaks in the United States, but they've transitioned from the kind of reverence of one people that has now been elapsed and eclipsed by this different kind of reverence from a different kind of people that has changed, but it's the same tree. It's just kind of mind-boggling to me, and I like Thanksgiving as a cultural turning point. At least the story of Thanksgiving and the real history of Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
if we can use that as like a the very first one, so to speak, as this like this cultural turning point to me. And maybe this is just because I'm a tree-focused person. The oak tree is like the thing that is standing still while there's just this blur of different like cultural things going on, this turmoil everywhere. The oak tree is like that one thing that is just perfectly in focus that entire time.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who's looking at it. They see this big thing and they revere it, but for completely different reasons. And it's this weird thing about like even the land. You have these two people who are looking at the land who are saying, this is the most important thing in my entire existence, but in the most like vastly different ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, as I was looking, like doing all this research and thinking about it, I was like, it doesn't translate in the same way as, let me tell you the story of, you know, Christmas and how trees played in it. Like that, there's a very easy through line, you know, to say, well, trees came from this and co-opted this over here. And now we have it here in our house and happy birthday.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, happy birthday to Jesus.
Happy birthday, Jesus.
But with Thanksgiving, the unique point that this oak tree kind of plays is both indirect and very central at the same time.
Yeah.
And I guess I was looking at it as like, this is not something that can be so clearly described as just, you know, here's the situation, here's the turning point, and moving on. It's way more nuanced to me. I don't know. Does that make any sense?
How do we go from here? How do we give a rating to this tree?
It's very difficult. I think we should stick with our jovialness, where we can always just look at the tree for its merits. We say,
sure.
Hey, cool story. Your leaves are stupid. I don't care how reverent you are.
Well, let's come back down to earth a little bit and give this tree a rating. This ubiquitous tree. Whoa, there's number eight.
We've said it so many times and we can't even say it anymore.
We're going to give it a rating of 0 to 10. Golden cones of honor. Casey, we begin with you.
I first off have to acknowledge the role that this tree has played in whatever regard, good or bad, for better or worse, forever. As long as people have been around this tree, they have given it a higher level of reverence than most other things. Not to say the native peoples of anywhere have, you know, have one tree that's way better than the others, because they use all their different trees and resources, you know, to a really intense way all the time. It's hard to even describe in our modern culture that is completely ignoring that section of it. However, there's also a bunch of interesting things to say about this tree in terms of its arboriculture fashion.
Mm-hmm.
It grows very well almost everywhere. Bottomlands. Great. Not quite bottom lands, but like lowland kind of area. It does a beautiful job in the city. Its fall colors are all the rage.
Yeah.
It meets the requirements. It's like this intense red and kind of slash russet color.
Mm.
Like it's quite handsome, to say the least. I like the shaggy bark. I like that it doesn't get shaggy until it's old age. If you wanna get to it, you gotta wait. I enjoy that.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think a tree should give away all of its secrets right away.
Sure.
I think it's sometimes nice when you're like, well, that tree's 50 years old. It's still a bit young.
Got a little trick up its sleeve.
Exactly. A trick up its leave.
Yes.
Nice, Alex. Nice. That was good. So, but it's, you know, it's not... it's not a superlative tree. It's not even the biggest oak tree.
Wouldn't you say it's superlative culturally, at least?
Culturally, it is a superlative tree. I do agree with that.
Maybe not physically.
You know, yeah, but I mean, it's still 100 feet tall.
That's big.
I mean, for you and I.
Because we're not 100 feet tall.
Yeah, but like,
yeah, of course. Yeah,
there's like
every tree is big.
There's a 20-year-old Douglas fir over there who's like big who.
Yeah.
So Douglas firs didn't. I mean, they're not even a superlative tree. But anyway, I hear what you're saying. It has a lot of superlatives. I think I'm going to give the eastern white oak, Quercus alba, for those of you keeping track, 9.2.
Wow.
I think I'm going to go 9.2.
Very solid score.
It's a very solid score, and I usually don't go that high for a broadleaf tree.
That's big.
They're a dime a dozen, but man, this one's so good. And I'm pretty sure I found one in Portland a couple months ago now.
Sweet.
Yeah, which they're very rare over here. Everyone just plants different oak trees.
Yeah.
But the leaves, because they have that really unique kind of curvedness to their lobes, and I was like, I'm pretty sure I know exactly what you are.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That very would be exciting. Cool. 9.2 golden cones of honor for the white oak Quercus alba.
9.2. Now, Alex, I talked a lot this episode.
Casey, can I be honest with you?
You may.
I do this thing where if I can't keep up in a conversation, my brain shuts down.
Okay, you've told us this before.
And I just sort of like zone out. And it happened a little bit today.
Yeah, yeah.
Not everybody listening is like me. I'm seeking a diagnosis.
I hope it's just going to be like alexosis or something like that.
Ooh, a brand new disease just for me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I would just love that.
No, narcissist. No. Not a disease. You would love it, but I think it would be more better to be a syndrome.
A disorder, maybe.
Yeah, an acute happening.
Yes.
You know, where you're just like, oh, well, if you listen to a podcast for too long, you might get alexosis syndrome.
My thing is, I keep up really well, and then I start thinking about something else, and I'm like, oh, fuck, what was he talking about? And then I have to, like, replay what you said, but then that replay is getting further and further in the past to where I have so much to replay that I can't catch up, so I go into my happy place.
Just try to jump back in at some point.
Yes.
Well, I admit, and I know we usually try not to do that. This one had a lot of weird, just kind of ruminations, maybe.
I think it was good. It happens, and it's a good, it's just as good as any other conversation.
Well, all that to say.
Conversation.
I am curious, Alex, what you have to say.
All right. I think because the tree is so ubiquitous, there's number 10. 9.
I think that's...
that's 10?
You just said it like 1 second before that.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, that's 10.
Yeah. Hey, well,
from now until the end of the year.
You guys all get 10% off.
10% off all stickers on our merch store, arbitrarypod.com/merch.
Wow.
With the coupon code HOLIDAY22. This is not a bit. Please go buy stickers.
Oh, man. That's so good. Now I feel like we need to make the code ubiquitous.
Oh, that would be really good.
Dang it.
It's far too late, Casey.
That's way in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah. The train has kept moving just like me.
The train of progress. The white oak, fabulous tree. I mean, what other oak has a million plus hits on Adobe stock?
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Stock is up for the white oak. It's obviously a beautiful tree. It's culturally important. It is physically important. It is culinarily important. I love a tree that gives back. You know this about me.
It's true.
I love a big tree, like a big chonkin tree, you know, big, wide, bulbous tree. I love that.
This gets there.
Oh, yeah. This is almost like the definition of that kind of tree.
Yeah, it really is.
I'm going to give the white oak a very well-deserved 9.0 golden cones of honor.
Oh, my God. Alex, this has been so long. This
hasn't happened in a while.
I can't believe this. Oh my God, I'm so excited. We got over 9. This is like an average of 9.1 on this tree. This is one of our highest ranked trees. This is incredible.
Yeah, I think it deserves it.
I think it does. I think it deserves it. I really do.
I think anything else would produce riots around the country.
Yeah, that's probably accurate.
To Quercus Alba and to Jessica Alba.
I'm happy you said that.
We say we honor you. Wait, how does the song go? Got it.
Nice.
All right.
That's what I'm talking about. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Quercus Alba. You're officially inducted into the Golden Arboretum of Honor. It's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. This one is from the Patreon. If you want to submit a question, join the Patreon at the $3 Quercus and Alder tier. That's Q&A. And this one's from Molly. Hi, Molly. Molly asks, why do some trees, especially big old ones, look like they twist their trunks as they go up? Is it related to species, age, environment? Am I just noticing weird trees? We've seen this a few times.
Yes, we have. Yeah.
A strange phenomenon, but I think I can answer this question.
Can I
just give my pass at it?
Yeah, go for it.
As far as I know, it's an environmental factor thing. Uh-huh. Say wind. Wind blows on the tree.
Yeah.
Right? And so it has to compensate with a little extra tensile wood or whatever.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
and so it twists a little bit to like to compensate.
Oh, he's breaking. He can't do it. He can't make
the teleprompter pain. Broke. And then that happens for 100 years and you have a twisted trunk.
Yeah, it's pretty, that is essentially it. Yeah.
Okay.
There's two main things that happen. You hit the first of them and you touched on the second one.
Okay.
The first being, it's a response to some stimuli. Wind is the perfect example. You'll see this happen on trees that are really exposed.
Sure.
In some way, maybe they're the tallest tree, or maybe they are out on a ledge or something like that.
A madrone hanging off a sea cliff.
Totally. I saw this with a juniper on the top of Smith Rock in Oregon. And it is essentially, if it gets blown, when trees are hit by wind, they don't just bend, you know, one way or another. They don't just bend one way or another, whichever the way the wind is blowing them towards, right?
Yeah.
They actually twist and kind of bend and twist and rotate as if you're standing up, put your feet about shoulder lengths apart, put your arms out, and then lean back a little bit. But whenever you lean back, twist a little bit to one side or the other. And when you lean forward, twist to the other side. And just kind of constantly twist on the top as you lean backwards and forwards. That's how a tree dampens its load or its wind load.
I imagine somebody trying to like balance themselves. They kind of like, whoa.
Yeah, it's exactly what it looks like. Yeah, that's totally it. But the idea would be if you bend back, the wind kind of goes above you. And if you twist to the side, it kind of goes around.
Okay.
So they kind of like bend and sway a little bit. So if you do that constantly.
And by the way, that's just like a physics thing, right?
Yeah.
That's not like the tree's doing something to the tree doesn't know that it's like lessening the impact.
Yeah.
That's just the way things move.
It's just the way things move.
Okay.
Yeah. So as it moves like that, then you end up getting a torsional impact in the wood that's on the lower trunk. Because in physics, if anything is moving, it all kind of goes back to the ground. So if wind is pushing on my face and I lean back,
yeah,
the strain goes all through my body into the ground because the ground is ultimately what I'm pushing on to hold myself from falling backwards.
Yeah.
So the strain is going through my back, down to my legs, and into my heels.
Okay.
Same thing if you're getting pushed from behind, except now it's going into your toes, right?
Mm.
So the strain, whatever part is being strained in the tree, it adds on a little bit of wood. So if it's being strained in this rotational pattern, then you get this pattern of rotational wood being put on because it's actually getting these micro tears in the outside that are in a spiral pattern because it's basically being twisted and bent at the same time.
Cool.
So that's initially how it happens, but then also it's a good strategy just because if you take something and you twist it, it's way more solid than if you just keep something straight up and down.
Can I give an example?
You sure can.
You have a piece of twine.
Yeah.
Okay. You can easily maybe snap it in half just by pulling on either end.
Okay.
If you twist it around a bunch,
uh-huh,
suddenly you got, quasi rope.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a good example.
Much stronger, much harder to twist.
Yeah. So that's exactly it. You just get more strength with a small amount of that twist. So it just is a good idea, but it also is how the tree is designed in order to put new wood on whatever part is kind of damaged.
Smart. So is the likelihood pretty low that you would find one of these twisted trees like in the middle of like a city?
Well, not
like
necessarily.
A city block or something?
You might still find it there because there's still wind that comes down.
Sure.
The most, it would be if it's really protected. That's where you wouldn't really find a tree that's growing like this super intensely.
Like a courtyard or something.
Yeah, like a nice courtyard where no wind comes through and it's just very much just sitting there. But also some trees are more prone to doing this than others are.
Mm-hmm.
So some are just, that's an adaptation that they've already like experienced and it's just now kind of in their DNA. Other trees that always stay small may not need that to happen as much.
I see. Oh, but, okay, interesting.
Yeah, but then it might be that as it gets taller, those genes kind of kick in and that structure starts to develop. I've seen a lilac tree that was like, it ended up growing kind of through the canopy of another plant.
Whoa.
So lilacs usually get maybe 15 feet tall. This one was like 30 feet tall. It was just one big tall stem that went up, but the entire thing twisted like a vine.
Wow.
Almost. It's really weird, but that was just how it grew because that was what made it a little bit stronger so it could have that height.
I know a very famous twisted tree.
Oh, which one?
The White Tree of Gondor.
The White Tree of Gondor.
And, hey.
Exposed.
How windy do you think it gets on top of Minas Tirith?
So windy that you could throw a dwarf and it'll come right back and hit you.
You could toss a dwarf, Casey.
You could. I'm sorry. Excuse me.
When it's dwarves, we call it tossing.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. I need to, as a point of order, was that at Minas Tirith?
Helm's Deep is where they toss. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. But it still works because in the universe of Lord of the Rings, there is dwarf tossing. And
I'm turning off my microphone.
Oh my God, we've lost Casey. out of everything in the last 2 years, it was this, huh?
Yes.
Thank you so much, Molly, for your question. If you got a question for us, like I said, join the Q&A tier of the Patreons, $3 a month. And you can either get your question read on live air on the podcast,
Exactly.
Or a big ass Q&A episode.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to be doing one coming up here very soon.
That's right.
Very excited. You can also join at many other tiers. We have a $5 level, which gets you 15% off our store and two extra episodes a month.
Woo-woo.
Also, you can go up one more level, join the Cone of the Month Club. It's very prestigious. We got some really fun ones coming down the road here.
We sure do.
That also gets you access to a hidden pop-up store of cones from months bygone.
That's right. We have something coming up in the Cone of the Month Club that we have never done before.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
It's extremely exciting.
Next, if you want it, you can do the $15 level, which is Arbitrary Plus, where we do two live streams a month. You also get a couple extra things and everything below as well. So
of course,
each time you level up, it includes all the tiers below. Finally, we have generous admission. If you just want to support and get us to do other cool things like trivia, get new posters sent out, get new merchandise, everything that you guys give us, we put back into this show.
Casey, you know, I don't think we say it enough, or at least we haven't. I don't remember saying it very recently. We appreciate our patrons so, excuse my French, effing much.
Wow.
Excuse me.
We do. I completely agree. And we also appreciate all of the rest of you listeners.
Of course. That was my second thing.
Oh, okay, great. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Even if you don't support us on the Patreon, even if you just listen to the show, that is support.
That is immense support.
Yeah, and we really appreciate it. Yeah. And we're coming up on 2 years of making this show.
We are, yeah.
And I just feel so incredibly grateful and thankful for everybody who listens, everybody who like shares with their friends or coworkers.
Yeah.
Everybody who buys a piece of merch, everybody who joins the Patreon, everybody who posts on the Instagram, comments or likes, everybody who's part of the unofficial Facebook group.
Yeah.
Everybody who comes to like see the live events and stuff of the two we've done.
Yeah. Everything that this community has done with us is just, it's beyond the pale. It's just so, so lovely.
It's incredible. I feel like I'm in the middle of a tornado made of love.
That's a great example. Yeah. Where it's kind of like you're getting whooshed about,
yes,
but there's no like flinging debris that you have to hide from.
No cartoon cows.
Nope. No little pop cans that have been turned into little turbines flinging through with little bits of information in it.
Right. Do you think if a cow, let's end the show with this question, this philosophical question. If a cow got picked up into a tornado,
uh-huh,
and it was full of milk, uh-huh, and it needed to be milked.
Okay.
And so like the pressure of the wind and everything started to milk the cow, oh, and the milk came out.
Uh-huh.
Do you and the milk got caught up in the tornado. Do you think after a while it would turn into butter?
Actually, Alex, 100% I think that's the case.
Yeah.
I think it would be more than butter, I think it would be like sweet cream butter, because surely a little bit of salt had gotten pulled up as well. And I'd be willing to bet that they probably threw a little bit of ice in there because it's very cold up
there.
Probably turned into some delicious ice cream.
You know, there are some hipster chefs in Portland who would kill for just an ounce of that.
Yeah. And they would also be like, we must go to a tornado, throw these ingredients into it, and then catch it wherever it comes down. We'll sell it to New York City for $5 million.
Hell yeah.
I would eat it.
Casey, thank you for this chat about the White Oak.
Thank you, Alex.
And thank you for listening. We hope you... Hey, you know what? We don't love Thanksgiving around here. Just the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't like the myth behind it.
Yes, but we do hope that you take this opportunity to appreciate the people around you. Give a hug. Give a kiss on the cheek to old grandma.
You can still give thanks, but don't forget the give part of that.
Yeah, boy.
Yes,
Casey,
I feel like it's important.
I'm thankful for you.
I'm thankful for you, Alex.
Thanks, bud.
Thankful for all of you out there. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.